Hi, this is WWR, Windwise Radio.
Coming to you from high atop a not-so-windy mountain in the Berkshires of western Massachusetts. Happy Earth Day. I hope you killed a turbine or planted a tree today. Joining us to talk about the efforts in Massachusetts will be Luis Bartow from Fairhaven, and an artist from Bedford, Virginia Irvine from Brimfield, and Andrew Wells from Ashfield. Good evening to everybody out there in internet land. Welcome to this edition of Windwise Radio. This is Earth Day. Happy Earth Day to all of our listeners. I am delighted to be talking about issues here in my home state of Massachusetts. From Cape Cod all the way out in the east to where I live in the western hills of Massachusetts, right along the border with New York, there's a struggle going on every day between the folks who are really interested in, I believe, true environmental concerns and those that want to promote the avalanche of wind turbines in order to line their pockets or further their political ambitions. In our state, the governor here, Deval Patrick, has a goal that he's often stated of wanting to have 2,000 megawatts of wind energy by 2020. Right now, there's about 45 megawatts of wind turbines installed in Massachusetts. He has a long way to go, and I'm hoping that he never reaches that goal of his. He's a lame duck in many ways. This is his last term. He is a co-chair of the Obama campaign this time around, and I believe he has his sights set on Washington. The Obama administration, of course, is pushing very hard to reinstate the federal production tax credits and the 1603 grants that is driving so much of the wind development here in Massachusetts and across the nation. We also want to say hi to all of our friends in Ontario that were with us last week, and I just wanted to say it was a great show, and I look forward to returning to the issues in Canada soon. Without any further ado, I want to introduce our guests this evening, and I hope that everybody's still with us. So I'm going to do them sort of in, I guess, alphabetical order because I know what other order to do. Luis Bartow lives in Fairhaven, Massachusetts, and she is under the threat of two gigantic wind turbines that are very close to where her studio is. She's an environmental artist, and she's a wonderful person. Louise, are you with us?
I am, Harley. Thank you very much for having me tonight.
Good evening. Good evening. I'm very happy that you're with us. They haven't been turned on quite yet, right? Their big goal was to flaunt Earth Day and turn them on Earth Day. Have they turned on those things yet?
Well, I think they did turn on the Scituate turbine for Earth Day. But what has happened here is that the commissioning tests have begun. And I want to tell you that I've just received some really heartbreaking emails from people who live close by. And I will say that one woman knew even before we had one turbine turned on very slowly. And already people are quite frightened. One email ended, "God help us all," which is just a really... It's a terrible thing that people are feeling this way.
It is horrible. It's a horrible thing that they're doing to people. And I want to talk more about some of these stories and the impacts that people are having to endure in order to make some corporations and individuals wealthy. Anne DeNardis is joining us. She's an attorney. I think her practice is in Bedford, Massachusetts. Where is Bedford?
New Bedford. Yes, it's right next door to Fairhaven. I'm representing the 20 different individuals from Fairhaven who are working to fight the turbines, to have them shut off and removed. We have filed a complaint in the Superior Court, and we are battling against the Town of Fairhaven, the Select Board, and the developer, who is being represented by Foley Hoag, an international law firm. So it really is a David versus Goliath fight, but we are ready to take this for the duration. And it's a daunting battle, but I would be happy to give others assistance and to discuss what we've had to deal with here relative to your respective battles across the state of Massachusetts in any case.
Now, it's in Superior Court is what you said?
Yes, we filed the complaint in Superior Court. We initially sought a temporary injunction to stop the construction of the turbines. We commenced the lawsuit in December before the turbines were actually erected. It's amazing how quickly these things can be brought in and put up and starting to blow in the wind. But we filed it in December. Unfortunately, the temporary restraining order was, and the injunction was denied by the court at that point. But we intend to continue to pursue our complaint. Our complaint is a valid complaint. The defendants have sought to try to have our complaint dismissed. Their request to dismiss the complaint was denied, so it is proceeding through the Superior Court. Unfortunately, that is a slow process, but our ultimate goal is to have them removed, taken down, and have the ground that was clear-cut replicated. So that is our focus. Unfortunately, they did start this weekend in spits and spurts, and I, too, as Louise has indicated, have received not just emails but phone calls from very distraught individuals. One woman who's suffering from cancer, who was on her porch and had to retreat inside. It was very disturbing to have the noise. She was very upset by the noise and felt physically ill over the noise immediately. So that's unfortunate concern that is evident as these are going to be starting to spin, but we're doing all we can to stop them. So it's a project.
Indeed, it is, and I think what you're doing is marvelous. I was watching the other day a video of you and a bunch of people in Fairhaven. I guess this was at a town meeting, and there was some guy who was a select board member. I don't know what his name was. But he left the room and he shut off the video while they were trying to gavel you down. If there are any of our listeners who haven't seen the video, it's quite dramatic, and I wanted to leap actually through the screen and throttle this guy, and I'm just lucky that I wasn't actually at that place, because I probably would have, somebody would have had to bail me out. I mean, the guy smirking about it and pretending that he hadn't done anything was despicable. I mean, utterly devoid of any moral compass, this guy. And
yeah, well, what's unfortunate with the wind turbine industry is they can come into small towns and take advantage and woo the select boards and the powers that be in the different small communities and to really take advantage of the financial, fiscal situation that is ongoing in these towns and promise them everything. The towns can become totally enmeshed in the promises and then, in fact, not really represent the people that they were elected to represent, but it appears that they can become, you know, part of the wind turbine industry, as puppets somewhat of the wind turbine industry, which is what we have experienced, appears, in the town of Fairhaven. Rather than listening to the complaints of the citizens who were filling that room that you could see on the video, they instead were very dismissive of us, insulting, derogatory, and in fact shut off the video. And this occurred in Fairhaven, but it is occurring elsewhere as well, that rather than listening to the concerns, bringing in open meetings, bringing in the community, to have the community participate in the process, things are going on in back doors, the wind turbine industry is allowed to manipulate the situation. So lessons that we have learned is that And that is how I have proceeded in the lawsuit, is that, you know, we are dealing with small towns, and small towns have make mistakes. So that is how our lawsuit is actually based, is on the errors of the community. So the select board that you have witnessed in that video, you know, made a number of errors, and that is the basis of our lawsuit, as opposed to the harmful effects that the turbines undoubtedly have created in different areas. We are instead focused upon the errors that have occurred by the in the process. So that
It's kind of a process-based, like procedural.
Absolutely. And I think that is the best tactic for most plaintiffs to take, is to look at the process that was gone through to erect the turbines. Look at the building permits. Look at the special permits that were issued. Make sure that everything was done precisely, because you're working with small communities. The small communities are going to skip through the appropriate channels. They're going to skip some of the details. They may have not followed the open meeting procedures. So that is the law that they have to follow, but they always do not. So my advice is to any community that is facing one of these projects, or that is going through this process, is to if they lose at the administrative level or the town level, like we did, we tried to fight it. The community went out. The community tried to fight the whole process and lost because of the lack of sympathy for from our elected officials. So then, look at what
that was very did. That was very kindly stated, by the way.
That's
very diplomatic of you.
Well, I try, but the tactic I would recommend using from any plaintiff's attorney or prospective plaintiff's attorney is to look at the process that was followed very carefully. Were the zoning bylaws followed? Was the appropriate notice given? Were the documents signed appropriately? If the zoning bylaw requires certain acreage, was that adhered to? So look at every detail, and that is, I think, your best avenue to try to succeed on these complaints.
Once it gets to that level. Now, for example, one of our other guests tonight is Virginia Irvine. Ginny, are you there?
Yeah, I'm Ginny to my friends, and I think we're all friends here.
I would certainly hope so. So, Ginny, you obviously won your battle. Let me explain for people. Virginia Irvine is one of the founding members of WindWise Massachusetts, which is an umbrella organization. It's an alliance of all of the local groups here in Massachusetts that are fighting industrial wind. And I guess she got started in a battle in Brimfield that they were quite successful. Now, they were successful without having to reach the courts. They battled it off at the select board level. Can you describe a little bit about that for us?
Yeah, about 2 years ago, we first heard about a project being proposed by the international company UPC, known as First Wind here in Massachusetts and in Maine and the United States, I guess. A really large player as far as wind development. And they were proposing to put 10 2.5, maybe 3 megawatt turbines on our local mountain. And we started out with 12 very dedicated people, and we started an organization called No Brimfield Wind. It was a very successful organization, and we actually went from those 12 people to ending up with 225 people at the end at a hearing that the selectmen had. And I must say that we had tremendous help along the way from Eleanor Tillinghast, who came and did an educational program in our town, and also from Kirk Tramposh, who did an educational program. So the people in our town were really educated in Wind Turbine 101 in very short order. And also our town had been threatened probably about 30 years ago by a toxic waste incinerator. And many of the members of No Brimfield Wind were important players in the fight against that. It was called Stop IT. And that took 3 years to win. And that was going through a process that was actually a hazardous waste siting law in Massachusetts. So that went through the state, fighting through the state with our good friends in Warren leading that battle. So we sort of had
a network already of people that you knew might be helpful.
Yes.
So what happened? You got to it. I mean, how did it actually transpire? Did you had a meeting, a select board meeting? Did they ever get to a vote?
We went to every single board meeting there was, took notes. We were there. We were the lawyers for First Win were at every single board meeting.
You mean Worst
that
Win?
We were First Win. What
worst
did I
win.
Say?
I said Worst Win.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And so we were very vigilant, and the town rallied. The selectmen held a hearing as to whether they should accept $30,000 from First Wind to do a study on the economic finances of the project, and we went in and they let us talk for 2 hours. People testified. There were three people, I think, that testified in favor during that 2 hours.
Isn't that always the case? I mean, I've seen you at a couple of these big hearings now on the statewide level at the WESRA hearing out in Barnstable High School, and then more recently at the DEPDC events that they've been having. And it seems like whenever they actually ask for public comment, it's always like 99-1. Then the one guy's wearing a polished suit and tie, and he's paid to be there by the wind industry, you know.
Well, the people that were testifying here for it was it, you know, someone that had gone to Hawaii and gotten a dog and pony show of their facility down in Hawaii, and a guy who said that, you know, it wasn't any different than living beside the railroad down there, and another person that, you know, something to that effect. So it was just local people that live in the town that were testifying.
So then they
took a break and they came back and more people wanted to talk, so they let those people talk. And then the person in, we had one select person that we knew was, you know, on our side, and two that we weren't really sure about, and one that we thought maybe, there were three of them. And the guy in the middle said he made a motion to decline the $30,000, and you know, the selectman that was on our side just about fell off her chair. And so then they voted 3-0 to decline it.
And that killed it off right there.
Well,
no.
First Win would have had to have a voting, a two-thirds vote in town meeting to change the zoning there. And they knew they didn't have it.
So they said, we don't have enough wind there, and moved on.
That's right. They didn't have enough wind.
Aha. Yeah, right. Trying to save face.
But that's why I got involved in WinWise, Massachusetts, because this, you know, and Louise, I am so sorry to hear about the people in Fairhaven. Really, my heart goes out to them. But that's why I got involved in this. This is not right.
It isn't right, and what they're doing to people is horrible. Now we have another one of the founding members here on the show with us of WinWise Massachusetts, and that's Andy Wells. Good evening, Andy.
Good evening, Harley.
So, Andy, were you guys at the very first meeting together of WinWise Massachusetts, you and Ginny?
I think we were, weren't we, Jenny?
Yes, we were. Remember, we were talking about how our two towns were sort of similar.
Right.
So how did that all come to be? I mean, I wasn't involved at that point. Who got this meeting together? How did WinWise Massachusetts form? What's going on with WinWise Massachusetts? What's the future with that part of the organization?
I think maybe, Jenny, you should answer that question because you're more involved on the day-to-day basis. I think you're really a prime moving force.
There were a small group of people, maybe 15 to 20, that came to a meeting in a centrally located place because obviously we had people from, you know, North Adams and people from way out at the end of the Cape meeting. And it grew from there. And that,
so who,
that was
who
back
called
in,
who called the meeting together? Was it Eleanor? Or?
Most likely, yeah.
Okay, so you met at this undisclosed location. Was Dick Cheney there? With his new heart. So you got there. So you guys formed the organization right there on the spot. And then how'd you divvy up the work?
Well, that was launched. That was in November 2010.
Okay.
So it hasn't been. It's only been a year and a half, I guess.
Now, how many groups are involved with? How many of the local groups do you have now that are involved?
We have. We're just counting today. We have about 1,300 people statewide that are really interested supporters. And that represents 200 cities and towns.
Wow.
And we have our steering committee is really fluid, but it's about 15 to 25 people on any given week.
Hmm. And you guys are doing great things. So Andy, I can get you to talk a little bit about something. So you've had two fights now, right? You started out fighting on the Cape. They kicked you off the Cape and you went to Ashfield, right? And
yeah, I guess depending on your perspective, I'm doubly blessed through the Patrick administration or doubly cursed in that I've had two projects proposed very close to homes I own. First on the Cape.
So you're like a pro NIMBY. You're not even playing.
That's right.
You're not at an amateur level anymore.
Yeah, I'm a hardened veteran. Yeah, actually the project in Eastham was really made traction around the same time that the Fairhaven project was passed. This was back in 2006, 2007. And it was a four turbine project. And that was 400-foot turbines, 1.5 megawatt, and the closest one would have been about 700 feet from my house.
Holy crap.
And unlike the WISE officials in Brimfield, most of the selectmen in Eastham were all gung-ho for it. And there was an energy committee there that was also driving this. And as usual, in most of these projects, there was seed money provided from the Massachusetts Technology Collaborative, which, you know, has really provided the impetus for all sorts of poorly cited projects in the state to gain traction by giving money to towns, money that they get from ratepayer subsidies, and then they throw at these projects in towns to induce town officials to put turbines on land. And in many cases, or most cases, these the projects are proposed very in residential areas, very near to houses. So in the case of Eastham, it took a concerted effort of several years, in fact, of dueling, you know, petitioned bylaw articles. I served on a bylaw committee there with members of the Energy Committee to try to come up with a compromise bylaw that 2 years running ended up in dueling bylaws on the warrant, and there was just an endless amount of fighting against all of the consultants that the state and the MTC brought in to promote the project. And at the end of the day, and this is after just an enormous effort by a group of people there, they really abandoned the project in part because through research that people had done, we realized they didn't even have clear title to the land. And it didn't actually pass a noise study, which is very rare in this state because as most abutters in Massachusetts to projects will learn, most of the sound studies done for these projects are so jerry-rigged that they come up with results that conform to their wishes. But in this case, they had done a noise study in very low wind conditions. It had passed. They then went back to do a second noise study in a higher wind condition, and it turned out the noise was about 13 to 15 decibels lower than the first time. So it really surprised them. So that the project died there. And then most recently, I live in the Western Mass hill town of Ashfield, and there are two projects that have been proposed here. One on the ridge facing my house, and those are still up in the air. What's going to happen with those?
Now, the situation with bylaws. I've been involved recently with trying to give some advice to people that are just getting started, getting organized in Lee, Massachusetts. A year ago, they passed a bylaw there basically in 5 minutes without debate. They took the model bylaw from the Berkshire Regional Planning Commission, which sets a minimum setback of a half a mile from a residence, and they gutted that and made it a quarter mile. And they did all of this without anyone in the town really being aware of it, and they did it in really literally about 10 minutes. And so it just seems to me, I mean, I was floored when I heard that there was no discussion. It was just sort of, let's just do this, and nobody talk about it, and that's that. So now here it is a year later, they're trying to figure out what to do. It just seems like they're got one foot in the hole and they have to sort of, come back and fight this thing. Is it a strategy on the part of the state to try to put these bylaws into these communities, or how does that work? I mean,
well, I can tell you that the Mass Model Bylaw was created primarily from the information provided by the American Wind Energy Association and from the UMass Wind Energy Center. This, according to Stephen Clark, who was then the state's director of wind energy development. So, and he was quoted in the news a couple of years ago saying that the intention of the bylaw was to make it easier for towns to site projects. So that's really, there's no science behind it. In fact, I've had conversations with Secretary Clark in which I've asked him to cite for me the information that was used, the medical and scientific basis for these setbacks, these short setback recommendations, and he can't provide it, and he won't. And I just so it's obvious that these bylaws were intended to just make any project palatable anywhere.
I can speak to what happened in Fairhaven. In 2004, bylaws were proposed at the town meeting, and it was sold to the town meeting members as a bill of goods that this would that wind turbines are going to come anyways in the town, and that the passage of wind turbine bylaws would protect the community. And I was there fighting against the wind turbine bylaws at that time, along with others from the community, referencing to the that it would make it easier for them to come in. So in 2004, wind turbine bylaws were passed over the objection of some, but it was clearly a very persuasive effort by, and I believe that this state, I have to believe that the state was behind pushing to have the bylaws adopted in various communities. At that point, the community was in the belief that it was being done for the benefit of, green laws and helping the earth. Then 3 years later, we were being wooed by, once the bylaws were passed, then the town was out to find somebody to get these wind turbines placed in the community. And then in 2007, we were wooed by a developer who came in with, and then the studies were done also after 2004 and 2007, the studies were done all funded by the state. And then in 2007, the developer came in with the flashy screen projector and promises of saving the town hundreds of thousands of dollars, and your taxes would not go up, your sewer bills would go down, it was a.
Did he throw in a fire truck?
No fire truck, though, but no, it seems nobody asked him, though. Probably he would have thrown that in as a bonus.
Right.
But people were definitely swept under this whole promise that was sent by the wind turbine industry, and that is how Fairhaven first got in the middle of this. In 2007 and 2008, the 2007 there was a vote by the town meeting to allow a lease for the town to sign a lease with these two wind turbines to be constructed within the town. So it started first with the bylaws being passed. Once the bylaws were passed, it was friendly to wind turbines. So if you can stop the wind turbine bylaw from being passed, you're well on your way. Also, if you can stop from being deemed a green community in Massachusetts, with it as being designated as a green community under the new Green Communities Act, wind turbines can be virtually placed as of right throughout your community. So that is something
you don't have to go through any zoning. It's already pre-permitted.
Pre-permitted, yes.
Yeah, nice.
Pre-permitted, it's welcomed. You know, any kind of green, what's seen as a green energy kind of project, solar power, wind turbines, those are seen as of right, that they have the right to come in without special permitting and a building permit, so to speak, and to be placed within the community. So if a community is aware of those changes coming within, you know, that the town is proposing or the city is proposing, that it's time to get involved. Time to get involved and try to stop it at that point. In Fairhaven, we were unable to stop it. People were too persuaded by the flash in the pan that was promised to the community, which is really a blue-collar working community that is in need of funds like many other communities in Massachusetts. So with the promises of, you know, lower taxes and helping with the sewer bills, people were persuaded. And, you know, if it's not in their backyard, well, maybe it won't be so bad.
Right, right. So, but I mean, it seems like, you know, there's no good way to turn. You know, last year there's a huge effort here in Massachusetts to defeat the Wind Energy Siting Reform Act, just like there had been for a couple of years prior. But finally, it seemed like it's, you know, had a stake put through its heart this year. And then, of course, now we're starting to see a siting standards process where they've taken some parts of Western and they're trying to bring it back. And we actually have a question from one of the people in our chat room asking about, okay, so if we have the local control and we're fighting either at the administrative level or at the court level, relying on those kind of procedural arguments that you were talking about before, and how would that change if, like, a WESRA light is passed and you have to start going to this? Will it make it more difficult to fight? Will it make it less if you have to go against, like, some statewide siting board?
Yeah, I'd like to speak to that because there is a WESRA light. It doesn't have a bill number right now. WindWise Massachusetts, a very important part of our group is state politics and being political watchdogs, going to the hearings. There were 15 hours of WESRA hearings, and the Joint Committee for Telecommunications, Utilities, and Energy held those hearings. And following those hearings in the middle of December, the WESRA was sent to study, which means it was dead. But however, under the surface, the TUE committee was working on a standards bill, what they called a standards bill. And that was brought out of committee, I believe, in March. And therefore, it could be attached as an amendment to any bill that's being considered now. For example, the budget is being considered in the House right now, or the competitively priced electricity bill, which has just passed the Senate and has now gone to the House. It could be attached to that because it's a very important part of getting that whole bill to move along it's necessary for them to be able to cite wind projects.
Yeah, if they ever have any chance in hell of bringing the hell of 2,000 megawatts to Massachusetts, they have to get some way to you know, get it past all the well-meaning, informed citizens of Massachusetts, and that's their problem they're running into up and down. Now, we are going to take some calls from our listeners, and I have one waiting on the line. We're going to take a call from Marsh from Savoy, who's got a question, and then we're going to take a quick break, listen to a couple public service announcements, and then we'll come back. For any of our listeners that do want to call in then with questions or comments, the phone number is 213-943-3683, and just make sure that you press 1 when you're prompted to, and that way we'll be able to bring you on. So I'm going to bring Marsh on right now. Marsh, are you there?
I just put us on speakerphone. Apparently, that did the trick.
Okay. Well, you're on live. You're on live with all of us, Anne, Louise, Andy, Ginny, and myself. You had a question for the bunch of us here.
Yeah. And my concern. It's a deep concern. It has to do with the siting of the industrial scale wind turbines in proximity to public schools, and of course putting them on top of or near parochial and private schools is also an issue. But I'm particularly concerned that the state and the towns mandate the kids to be in these buildings. They can't get away, and they're going to be clobbered by the vibration and noise effects. And my real problem is, why do we have to wait for these children to be injured before people will focus their attention on this matter? I strongly believe that when this takes place, we're going to be witnessing public child abuse, child abuse on a scale which we've never witnessed before in this country. And I think that where we're going is into a criminal situation. Now, I'm really glad that Ann DeNardis is here on this panel, because I would really like to hear her thoughts on this matter.
Okay, thank you for the question, Marshall, and happy Earth Day to you. I'm going to see if Ann has an answer for you.
Yeah, Marshall, that is a great concern that we have as well. In fact, with the Fairhaven project, the two 1.5 megawatt turbines are within 2,000 feet of a brand new elementary school. It's a multi-million dollar elementary school, which is going to be a regional school, which is going to be placed within 2,000 feet of the wind turbines. When the sun rises in the morning, there's no doubt that the flicker will be going into the windows of the children who are going to be educated there and be sitting in those seats for in an elementary school in the same classroom, most likely, for 6-7 hours a day. So the children who have special needs, the children that have autism, ADHD, epilepsy, any of the plethora of disorders that children can experience is a real concern. And the school is not yet constructed, but it is to be constructed. And the town was not even the town voted on it. What's the real tragedy in this community is that the town voted on placing the school in this area. 1 month after the vote was passed to place the school in this area, we learned that the wind turbines wouldn't be placed there. So there was a withholding of information. The public did not have the knowledge of what was going to be done in that area, and now we're trying to have another look at this by the Massachusetts School Siting Board to determine whether or not we can what can be done in that situation. But you're absolutely right, and I foresee in the future, not only in my town but in most towns that have schools sited closely to wind turbines, that there will be a plethora of personal injury lawsuits against the towns, against the communities, against the developers, to make the connection between the injuries that the children are suffering and their learning disabilities that most likely will be incurred from the effects, the ill effects of the wind turbines to these small children who are, innocent victims in this whole situation, and trusting of their communities that they're going to be educated in a school where they will be protected, where they will be safe, not only from predators, but from the unknown predator of the wind turbine industry. And so I would foresee that that is going to be a wave of lawsuits in the future as more is found out, unfortunately, from the ill effects that these turbines are going to create to our innocent children. So, people like Virginia and Andrew and Windwise, Massachusetts, are fighting at the state level regarding siting. We have to continue to persist because we are David's facing Goliath. There's so much money. It is green energy, and it's not green in the sense of Earth Day. It's green in the sense of money, green money that is flowing to this industry. So they're not going to stop. These are the new, I've heard the phrase used as carpetbaggers. These are the new carpetbaggers. They're coming into the small towns, the small communities, taking advantage of the lack of sophistication, so to speak, of the elected officials.
Well, yeah, why would anybody have any reason to know? You know, I mean, I know far too much about wind turbines now, as do most of my friends. You know, we're being forced to learn about DVA scales and DVC scales, and you know the. What infrasound is, it seems pretty insane that we have to all engage in this sort of big educational process just to fight for the peaceful enjoyment of our own homes.
You're absolutely right.
Yes.
I'd just like to add a really deep concern that I have about the Fairhaven sighting. These turbines are being placed. There are 701 homes within 3,000 feet of the turbines. Many of those homes house children who either attend the Woods Elementary School now or will attend the new Woods Elementary School. Here's my concern. These children will sleep, live, play, and go to school all under the turbines. And that is a burden that I have a lot of concern about.
And rightfully so. And this is why this fight must be won. This is why, it's so important what Anne is doing, what all you're all doing there, to try to turn these off and get them removed and sent back to some junk heap where they belong.
I mean, China.
Is that where they came from?
Yes, we got in Fairhaven, we actually, although TARP money is being used, our site was not eligible for GE turbines because the GE setbacks demand a greater distance than the Fairhaven turbine. So we got Sinoval turbines from China because the setbacks, they have no setbacks.
Uh-huh.
And they're able to fit right into our community. And a word about the Sinoval turbines, too. We're very concerned, too, because American Superconductor is suing Sinoval. And so here we are.
What are they suing them for?
For patent infringement, yes.
Perfect. Well, this is a real fine.
We can go on for hours about the Fairhaven turbines, unfortunately.
Yes. Okay. So
it just adds salt to the wound. It just really does. The
take
whole thing.
Our taxpayer dollars, put these in order to put something that the community doesn't want in a place where they don't belong. This is perfect American democracy at work.
Right.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break, folks, and I want to play these messages. We'll be back in about a minute and a half. Anyone that wants to call in and get involved in conversation, 213-943-3683. This is Windwise Radio. In Ontario, Canada, on Victoria Day weekend, there will be a province-wide information picket. Start planning for May 21st. Groups from all over Ontario will target visitors of major tourist areas in a province-wide information picket. Where do urbanites flock to in your area over the long weekend? Please join other groups in this effort. More information will be posted as it becomes available. Check ontario-wind-resistance.org. Our friends at Wise Choices for Lee have an upcoming event this Friday, the 27th, at 7 p.m. in downtown Lee at the Courtroom. Dr. Ben Luce, a PhD physicist and expert in alternative energy, will be presenting on the science of industrial wind on northeastern ridges. Q&A to follow. Please tell all your friends. Don't miss this important event. Get your Kong on. Please support WWR by going to Zazzle.com/WindWise Radio and get yourself some of our fabulous gear. This is WWR, WindWise Radio. If your group has an announcement they'd like read on the show, please send them along and we'd be happy to help. Well, we're back, and I hope that people will also take advantage of our special offer from the folks at Wind Concerns Ontario. Jane Wilson and Parker Gallant put together a brilliant book called Dirty Business, The Reality of Ontario's Rush to Wind Power. And there's a special offer on the windwiseradio.org website for any listeners that want to get a copy of it. It's sitting at my bedside when I want a little bit to read before I head off to sleep in my little turbine-free zone over here. This is what I'm reading. So welcome back. We have about 10 more minutes left, and I want to try to give everybody an opportunity to try to answer a couple of questions or give advice on some of the common questions that people are often asked if they're on this side of the fence. So I know I've been called a NIMBY by several people now. And I'm wondering what you think the best response to some person using that epithet might be. What do you think, Andy? How should you respond if you've called a NIMBY?
Well, can I read you something from a book that is, I think, a perfect response to your question?
Sure.
It's very short. There's a great book that is on sound by Garrett Kaiser, and in a chapter on wind turbine sound, he addresses this issue, and he writes, "What would happen to the world if everybody turned into a NIMBY? One thing that might happen is that we would stop putting window dressing around the issue of global climate change. What might happen is that communities and individuals within communities would have to come to the same table and negotiate what they wanted and what they were willing to give up to get it. Tranquility in one place could no longer be purchased at the cost of noise in another, at least not on the sly, because everybody's a NIMBY now. Everybody has a backyard, loves their backyard, and is committed to keeping it habitable." And it goes on and on. But, when I hear people use the word NIMBY, to me it's always a dead giveaway that whoever's saying it probably knows very little about the issue, because it's not – the issue really isn't NIMBY. The issue is what kind of standard that governs, you know, everyone do we support? And frankly – And I think one of the unifying elements to people in this movement is the unwillingness to sacrifice others, whether a turbine would be in your backyard or not. So I know people who have been abutters to a proposed project. Those projects were defeated, but they remain involved precisely because of the morality involved in not wanting other people to be sacrificed on that green altar.
Well said. Well said, my friend. And I think you're right. I mean, I think that most of the people that I know that are involved in this have whether they've won their particular battle in their local neighborhood, or they are still fighting it, or they've lost it, are still concerned about everyone else out there. I think there's that very admirable an honorable kind of streak to these people. Jenny, do you have anything to add to the? Have you ever been called a NIMBY?
Well, we were called NIMBYs 30 years ago when we didn't want the toxic waste incinerator here because for health reasons. I don't know that we were, we probably were called NIMBYs during the first WIND thing, but it was interesting. Some members of WindWise Massachusetts went to a seminar at Tufts being held by a postdoc student who was studying NIMBYism and WIND. And she gave this slide.
Can you get a degree in NIMBYism?
She got her doctoral in NIMBYism on tidal energy.
Huh.
And so she had this slideshow to start out with, and it was like the American Wind Association's slideshow. And so I think that money, you have to have money into a program like that. And I think that that was an example of somebody and put up to doing that task by the Wind Association industry.
So, so I'm curious, so what happened at this meeting? Did you
Well, she's doing a study, and we actually talk with her. She has actually talked with people in Falmouth, which, you know, to me, whenever anybody calls somebody NIMBY, all I think about is the health effects that people in Falmouth are suffering and the insistence on the town of having still having the money from their wind turbines, even though these people are suffering. And so she's doing a study. We suggested some places that she go, Newburyport, where there's been a lot of damage to people's health, not to Hull. She was going to go to Hull, but we suggested that she actually go across the water there to Hingham because people have been affected across the water and so on. And I don't know whether she will do any of those suggestions and talk to any of those people, but I hope so.
I hope so. I mean, she has to get to do her postdoctoral work in some kind of NIMBYism, right? So so it really is interesting, fascinating that it's being talked about for somebody's doctorate. It seems odd to me. Louise, you're probably being called NIMBY from one point or another. Has that happened?
We've been called everything. And yes, there was a cartoon in the Standard Times which showed a bunch of people trying to pull a turbine down, and it was labeled Fairhaven NIMBYs. But I'll tell you what, though, I have a good...
I want the T-shirt.
Listen, we've also been called dangerous. We've been, I showed the movie Windfall, and I had to hire a police detail.
What?
To protect... Yes.
That's crazy.
Oh, well, there's a lot of crazy things that have happened in here. But I have a good response. And this is what we've tried to do in Fairhaven over and over again, is to turn the conversation back to its essence, its essential nature. And here's what I say. I am concerned about the health of my community. And that's what we stood at the Blade signing several weeks ago, and we held signs, and we all said, all the signs said, we are concerned about the health of our community. And I believe that you can turn the message around by focusing on what you really need to focus on, what the truth is and what the right thing to do and what the right thing to focus on is.
We have one of the volunteers with Preserve Lennox Mountain, which was the group that fought off the turbines in Lennox, Massachusetts, a fellow named Terry Flynn. Terry always said that one should always concentrate on one's values first. Let's not get involved in these discussions of technical nature about the sound pressure waves and the shadow. Let's start with the ideas. What do we value most about where we live and our communities? And it comes down to the basics, like people's health and the natural beauty of a ridgeline and the creatures that live on a mountain that need a place to to live, the wildlife, whether it's a frog or it's a bear. And I think you're saying the same thing. It comes down to a question of concentrating on the values, and it's just a cheap and easy shot to take at someone to say, oh, you're a NIMBY, you're only doing it because it's your backyard. So I agree with you. I think that's true. Now, I think I saw a video of you talking to one of the developers there in Fairhaven about trying to get them to agree to talk about a bond to guarantee should something go bad with people's health. Did you ever get an answer out of that fellow?
Well, I'm still working on it. I've asked several times. I've asked in writing at the town forum. I did ask him in person at the Blade signing when he said that was not the right time.
Oh, yeah. When is the right time?
Well, Tuesday night.
Night is the right time.
Well, Tuesday night we have a meeting with the Board of Health, and the selectmen have brought in the developer to be at this meeting. This is a meeting about setting up a complaint process. We're really concerned about what's going to happen when these go on, and we want to give people a way to respond and we don't want the complaints to disappear into the vast maw of the developer's business sense. So he will be there Tuesday night, and I'm thinking it would be a great night to ask him again.
Maybe you should bring signs that says, is now the right time? You know, do you have to get on his calendar or something? Is he that busy that he can't?
This is a real problem in Fairhaven. This is a private developer. The town has leased the land. And essentially, they have sold out a whole neighborhood for $100,000 a year and the promise of cheap electricity. And this breaks my heart. And together with wonderful people like Andy Nardis and a whole host of other people that have been fighting a lot longer than I have. And all the way, actually, one of them went back to fighting a toxic sludge plant here with Anne, and I think that's how they met. But there's a whole host of people that have been working long and hard and are committed, and they're doing the best they can, and we're just going to keep on trucking, I guess.
Well, I'm very proud of you, and I'm very proud of the effort of everybody that's on the call tonight. I think that what you're doing is important and will be seen in the years to come as an action that was one that very courageous people took up, that people that had a sense of what really needed to be done to protect our commonwealth and our communities. Anne, I think I'm going to end up giving you the last word tonight, and then we're going to have to sign off. I told you before we all started this that an hour seems way too short sometimes, and I think that I feel that way tonight. Anne, can you give us some closing thoughts about what do you think the fight holds for us in the state of Massachusetts and Fairhaven? Where do you think all of this is going?
Well, Harley, I think that we have to all remember there is strength in numbers, that together we stand, divided we fall. We have to continue to stand together and stand in this fight. And being called NIMBY is not a moniker of shame. I think that it is nothing to shy away from, that if you are called a NIMBY, I mean, yes, I am a NIMBY, and I would be concerned about you as well. I don't want it in my backyard, and I don't want it in your backyard. And why don't I? Because unfair to burden one group of people to so-called benefit a greater community. Why should one part of the community be unfairly burdened with health effects, with property devaluation, with sound, with flicker? So together, we must continue to fight. Our government, unfortunately, is pushing this as a means of bringing in jobs, of changing the financial landscape. But we need to continue to push this as what this really is. that this is a boon for the wealthy, for investors, for big business, and it is a great loss to our sense of community, to our landscapes, to home as we know it, and we need to protect each other. So if someone is a NIMBY, they are a person that needs to be protected because it is going in their backyard. And why should they be burdened more than anyone else in the community? And so it's really about a sense of conscience and a sense of humanity that needs to continue to be pursued by all of us. Your radio program is wonderful, Harley. Thank you for doing this. Thank you for bringing it out into the community and out throughout the world. People have been suffering from this, and this allows it no longer to be silent, for people to become educated, for people to know the difference, that what is being portrayed as the next great thing is not the great thing that it's being portrayed as. And this is the reality of the situation, that people are being harmed, and we need to stop it. So thank you very much for the opportunity.
Well, thank all of you very, very much for participating tonight, and I look forward to hearing successful news from Fairhaven. I want to come to the party when they bring them down. I also want to.
They're going to plan on it, Harley.
I'll be there with toasting everybody for all of your hard work. Thank you all very much. I do want to say a couple things, and then we're really going to sign off. One is that next week our program is going to be with Robert Bryce, who is an author and a speaker of some renown. He is often on TV. He comes at this from a very different perspective. He believes that, it's hard to, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but it's a very different perspective about energy in the U.S. and what's possible and what isn't with alternatives. We're going to have half the program with him, and then we're going to have a roundtable, and we're going to read some headlines and talk about them. I also want to reach out to my friends in Maine, David Corrigan, Monique Agnel, and Steve Thurston, and want to congratulate them for the huge victory they had over Worst Wind this week. They suffered a big defeat up there, Worst Wind, and I'm happy to see it. So good night from Windwise Radio. Thank you very, very much. Bye-bye.